And we're back to the report, and it's a typical Monday with us. We're looking for our guests. Again, we are. You can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm. And today, we want to make sure we mark it. This is June 24.
It's the national holiday of Quebec.
The national holiday.
La Fête Nationale Jean-Baptiste Day.
Fête Nationale.
Yeah. See, didn't notice anybody commemorating it here in Toronto.
It's Saint John Baptiste.
That's right. That's right.
By the way, they have called it Fête Nationale. They used to call it Saint John Baptiste.
That's right. That's
but
right.
It's both. People.
It is. It is both. And actually, it's,
well,
it is celebrated in other countries as well.
Yeah. It's apropos of my announcement, which is it's also the 200th anniversary of the Battle of Beaver Dam. And now all Canadians know that the battle was won by 300 Mohawks who were Catholics, led by a French, that would be Lower Canada captain, named Ducharme, right? That's what we always, we go to Niagara Falls and we all celebrate Captain Ducharme and the 300 Mohawks that won the great battle. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We talk about Laura Secord. So now, the reason we talk about Laura Secord is so because she's an Anglo-Canadian and she's a United Empire, blah, blah. And we have forgotten that the battle was fought by Mohawks. And the story has been distorted into this woman who went through the woods. The Mohawks, of course, were in the woods. That's how she happened to run into them. They were watching the Americans. They set a trap, and they beat them, and they captured them. And afterwards, they said the hero was a guy named Fitzgibbon from, you know, from English Canada. So all that had to be corrected at the time. But now all that's washed away, and we all to remember Laura Secord, the 300 Mohawks led by a French Catholic, has been forgotten. So listen, history is today. It's a battlefield. We should fight back and say no. Either recognize the 300 Mohawks by name, the leaders, and particularly Captain Ducharme, or quit telling me fairy tales about Laura Secord. She wasn't there, by the way, for the battle. But we are joined, I believe, by somebody who knows battles, and that's Zafar Bengash. Are you there?
Hello, Phil. How are you?
Very good. Sorry about the history lesson. I didn't realize you were on the line.
That was wonderful.
It was true, too.
I learned quite a bit.
I bet you agree, because after all, you've experienced colonialism, that they tell fairy tales to hide the truth.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, now, we're at a crucial point on the matter, several matters in the Middle East. I know you were at the demonstration Saturday, as was I, and I'm still wearing my hands off Syria.
Right.
Now, why? Tell us, in your opinion, why is this so important at this time that we take this kind of stand to say enough is enough, hands off Syria?
Well, over the weekend, in fact, is the day that the rally was held in front of Queen's Park. There was a meeting held in Doha, Qatar, which is the, you know, the tiny Persian Gulf state that is ruled by a tribal emir. And there, 11 countries, including the U.S. and Britain, France, Turkey, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, etc., they met and they decided that they were going to arm the Syrian rebels because they were losing the war.
Mm-hmm.
Now they have sort of come forward very openly that they will arm these mercenaries. Actually, they've been doing it for quite a while, but with the weapons that they were sending them, obviously, it wasn't deemed sufficient or enough to enable these mercenaries to defeat the Syrian army. So now they want to give them much more heavier and bigger weapons. There have been recent reports, in fact, reports that I read yesterday, that these rebels have now been given anti-aircraft guns and other heavy weapons. And it is for this reason that I believe it becomes extremely important that we all raise our voices to, first of all, demand that these weapons should not be sent to the rebels. In fact, it is illegal because these are people coming from outside. And it's also illegal because Syria is a sovereign country. And anybody who sends in weapons to Syria is violating international law. Not that, unfortunately, countries like the U.S. or Britain or France ever care for international law. That is only invoked when they want to use it against countries that they target. So here we have a situation whereby weapons are being sent into Syria. Mercenaries are being sent into Syria. Again, it is against international law. And these mercenaries are being trained in Jordan, in Turkey, in other places, and also being armed to carry out gruesome acts in Syria. And so that is why it is important that we raise our voices and demand that this kind of interference should stop. The situation in Syria ought to be handled by the Syrian people themselves. It is their right, and whomsoever they choose as their president or as their leaders is something we should respect. I don't think it is for the U.S., Britain, France, Canada, Saudi Arabia, or Qatar, or anybody else to decide who should rule Syria.
You know, we do, Bush and Obama and these people talk about a new world order. Actually, they raise a good point. We do need world order, and they should obey it.
Yes, exactly.
You know, what is good for the goose is good for the gander.
That's correct, yes.
If they, isn't it apparent, by the way, that they're not interested in stability? They're not interested in mutual respect by states. They talk openly about removing other leaders or ordering them to step down. And then they talk about dividing. Every country that you've mentioned here, in the neighborhood, the Jordanians, the Syrians, Lebanon, and Iraq, etc., they actually, including Turkey, they talk rather openly about changing those borders. I mean, people in Paris and London and Washington talk about, well, we're going to have to change the border.
Well, you see, this is the problem that these people basically still harbor that colonial mindset that a century ago had basically drawn these borders for these countries. A century ago, the map of the Middle East was very different from what it is today. There wasn't any Saudi Arabia. There wasn't any Jordan, there wasn't any Israel, and a number of these other tribal sheikhdoms that exist in the Persian Gulf did not exist either. And the French and the British between them, through what is referred to as the Sykes-Picot Agreement, these were two bureaucrats, British and French, who decided, literally on a napkin, as they say, decided to redraw the borders of the Middle East and give various pieces of real estate to their various puppets, so that then these puppets would do the bidding of the colonial powers. And now they want to redraw further maps. What is happening in Syria, obviously, if it is the situation is not brought under control and peace and stability established there, there is a very serious risk that Syria might break up into different parts and components. There is, in fact,
much easier to rule.
Exactly. In Iraq, for instance, they've already done that. There is a de facto partition of Iraq. The north part of Iraq is under the control of the Kurds, and they are making totally separate and independent agreements with other countries, international agreements, bypassing the central government in Baghdad. And so gradually, Iraq is being pushed towards a real partition in which the north of the country would become Kurdistan, and the rest of the country probably would also be split into two segments. So Iraq as a country would disappear. The same danger exists in Syria, and that is why it is extremely important that we all demand that this kind of foreign interference should end. Let the people of Syria decide what they want for themselves. I don't think anybody from outside has any right to do the kinds of things that they are doing. Mm-hmm. And that is why I believe that this Saturday rally was important, because for the first time in many years, the voices of the Syrian people were heard, people yes. that did not want foreign interference. In the past, we have, you know, people have organized rallies in which they've been asking for yes. foreign interference and foreign intervention.
It's typical, actually, of Canadian peace organizations and whatnot, historically, not today, all of them, but they certainly in the past have been rather colonialist themselves
yes.
and thinking they knew what was best for those people.
That's correct, yes.
Zafar, a very important matter seems to have occurred. I said on the program earlier that there was a great victory won by the Syrian army in a place called Qusair.
Yeah, Qusair, yeah, Al-Qusair, yes.
Now, I've noticed that there seems to be kind of turbulence after that victory. I mean, Washington seemed upset, everybody talking more rapidly and more in extreme terms, but also we're hearing reports that the government of Qatar may be in a transition state. Would there be a connection between these phenomena?
Well, let's first of all talk about this town of Al-Qusair and why it's important. It's close to the Lebanese border, and it has great strategic importance because any party or group that controls this particular town will essentially control the flow of weapons and mercenaries from Lebanon or any people that have been assembled in Lebanon to go into Syria. So by recapturing the town of Al-Qusair, the Syrian army has essentially blocked a very important transit route for the transfer of weapons and mercenary fighters into Syria. Mm-hmm. That is why everybody has gone berserk, and they're sort of literally tearing their hair out, because all their plans have been put into turmoil. Mm-hmm. With respect to Qatar, I don't think that that has any specific link with the situation in Al-Qusair. In fact, that had been talked about for quite a while, and the Qatari
is it going to happen? You get the impression it will happen?
I think what the Qatari emir wants to do, I think it will happen in the sense that he wants to make sure that his son succeeds him, because his brother, who's the prime minister and the foreign minister, he's older than the emir of Qatar, but the emir wants to make sure that his own son succeeds him, because, you know, in family-based rule,
It can get messy.
Exactly. So that's why they want to make sure that they do it in front of their eyes before the uncle gets,
it becomes too ambitious.
Too ambitious and has his, own plans up his sleeve. So mm-hmm. that's what's taking place.
There's a lot of talk, too, about Hezbollah and their role. I don't know how extensive it has been. Maybe perhaps you could tell us, but
sure.
also... One of the things, I read the speech, and I really urge everybody to get the speech by Mr. Nasrullah, where he said, explained their position. But the elements of it that I noticed was he said, we're on the border, we have, these villages are our people. And these terrorists over in Syria are saying they're going to come and kill us.
Yes.
No. Well, if he's invited by the sovereign state of Syria to help drive off those terrorists, seems to me that too is perfectly reasonable, and certainly they have a duty to protect those villages.
Sure. You see, Al-Qusair, as I mentioned, is very close to the Lebanese border, and before the French colonialists came, Lebanon used to be part of Syria. So the families in Lebanon and Syria are sort of on both sides of the border. There are many Lebanese families that live in Al-Qusair, and these foreign mercenaries and other thugs that had taken over that town had carried out gruesome crimes against the civilian population. And now these mercenaries were moving into or attacking villages inside Lebanon as well. And so Hezbollah and its leader, Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah, decided that we have had enough. We are not going to allow these mercenaries and these killers to continue mm-hmm. to terrorize our people. So they decided to go and confront them in Alcocer. And after 2 weeks of fighting, these mercenaries were driven out of there. They fled that town because, you know, people that are used to killing civilians are not able to fight against professional, committed, dedicated fighters like Hezbollah. So
that's a very good point. By the way, do you notice that the Western media calls setting off car bombs in Damascus, they call that warfare?
Yeah.
I mean, anybody can do that. I mean, all you need is 10 well-trained guys with the appropriate intelligence gear to cause, a havoc in a neighborhood and murder some children.
Absolutely.
But that isn't warfare, and you haven't really accomplished anything other than to allow the New York Times and the Toronto Star to say it's an act of war,
right?
You know, or heroic or whatever. I don't know.
Yes. You see, this is one of the ironies of this whole situation, that people that are involved in car bombings, people that are involved in blowing up buildings, schools, even exploding bombs in mosques and killing religious leaders, they are presented as somehow being freedom fighters. You know, this is the irony of this whole thing. And I think your listeners should pay attention to the fact that many Al-Qaeda fighters are now in Syria, and the U.S. government is actively involved in supporting and financing them. You know, I was a little amused, 3 days ago when I read that the Americans were demanding of the Taliban that they should cut off the Taliban in Afghanistan, that they should cut off their links with Al-Qaeda. I thought the Taliban should turn around to the Americans and tell them, well, they are your friends. You are in touch with them. And if the Taliban should turn around to them and say, you should cut off your links with Al-Qaeda. We don't have any links with them.
By the way, didn't the Taliban open an office in Doha?
Yes, they just did. And that was the whole thing. You see that...
Do they go there for the Doha? I couldn't pass up the joke. It's really, could you explain, I mean, this is Zafar Ben-Gesh, Crescent International. Can you speak to the claims that that the Iranians sent troops to Syria? Is there any truth to that?
Absolutely not. No, Iran has not sent any troops to Syria. And if they do, they will openly declare it. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you what the Iranians and Hezbollah both have said. They said that we will not allow the destruction of the religious sites in Syria. And in particular, in Damascus, there is not only a mosque, but a very famous shrine. It is called Zainabiyya. Now, Zainab was the daughter of the fourth caliph, Imam Ali. And she's a very revered figure in Islamic history. Her shrine is in Damascus, and regrettably, these foreign mercenaries backed by the Saudis and the Qataris, etc., they're really very nasty. They can do all kinds of nasty things. They have desecrated graves and so on, and they've blown up mosques. In the past, in fact, at the beginning of May, they actually dug a grave of a well-known companion of the Prophet of Islam, and they took his body away from there. And we still don't know what they have done with it. I mean, this is the kind of mentality that these people have.
But it also, you know, it kind of suggests that maybe people in U.S. intelligence and whatnot who are trying to guarantee sectarian conflict might even advise something like that.
Absolutely.
Right?
I don't think that we can put it past them, because this would definitely inflame passion.
I mean, if you want to see sectarian battle, you ask each other, what could we do to get these people at each other's throats? That
exactly.
would be one of the things that you could do.
Yes, absolutely. So,
and people calling themselves Muslims often are simply mercenaries.
Yeah.
You know,
and in this,
you can't tell a Muslim by his beard, as the proverb says.
Yes, exactly. So this is the kind of thing. And as I was saying, that Iran and Hezbollah would definitely want to make sure that those religious shrines in Damascus and in other places are protected. Hezbollah, in fact, has said that it has sent its fighters to Syria to protect those shrines. But these are not going to be people in their thousands or hundreds. They're going to be probably a few dozen to make sure that these criminal elements do not come and plant a bomb or a car bomb or whatever to carry out their nefarious activities. Yeah. Because would inflame passions and it would create sectarian warfare.
I would think that the message of that demonstration Saturday would really resonate with Canadians when they know this kind of crazy activity is going on, of sectarian and desecration of graves, whatnot, that would make it easy for Canadians to understand that this has got to be stopped.
Exactly, exactly.
And I want to ask you a segue here with the last question. Would be that we have a new president in Iran. Islamic Republic. Could you give us a picture of him? Who is he, and what is his background?
Well, first of all, he is a religious figure. He has come through the religious seminary, and also he got his PhD in international law from a university in Scotland. And he's also the author of hundreds of books. He has
hundreds
of books. Yes, he's a very well-known scholar.
People call Obama literate.
And he's in the past, he was Iran's nuclear negotiator. And after President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad became the president, since that time, he has been the head of a strategic research center. And he's known to be one of the best sort of, you know, foreign policy experts in Iran. He's also the representative of the leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, on the National Supreme Council. Mm-hmm. During the war, when Iraq had attacked Iran, he was also a member of the Defense Council. So he's held a number of very, very important positions. And clearly, you know, in during the election campaign, he was able to put forward his program very clearly to the electorate. Contrary to the news that we have heard that he was elected by the so-called reformist vote, etc., or people who are opposed to the system, the overwhelming majority of votes that he got was from the countryside, where people are more conservative and more supportive of the system in Iran rather than people in the cities.
Yeah. It has been remarked on that the West seems to be just oscillating dramatically from east to west and back and forth. They want him to be a moderate. They want him to be a wannabe American. He wants to visit Hollywood or whatever.
Yes.
They seem to they're trying to impose on him an image, but they seem to be, it would appear to be just a fantasy of their own.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, before the elections were held, Washington Post had a story headlined, Rouhani would not be allowed to win. I'm not quite sure exactly what they did after that.
Yeah. They seem to know their own system very well about who gets to win and who doesn't. I guess they think the rest of the world does the same thing.
Absolutely.
They need to get a mirror.
Yes.
Well, Mr. Snowden actually gave him one.
Yes.
Zafar, it's really been great speaking to you. Very informative.
Thank
I was very proud to see you there. I enjoyed your speech.
Thank you.
And we look forward to talking to you as this story unfolds. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye. Zafar Benguys, Crescent International. And we're very fortunate in Toronto to have Zafar as someone who knows the Middle East like the back of his hand, knows all the issues. You're listening to The Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. And by the way, Phil, you have a program tomorrow at 12 o'clock.
Yes, Classical Underground, 12 to noon. 12 to 2.
12 to 2.
12 to 2.
And I have an announcement, too, a sad one. We on our show not long ago, we interviewed the author Jim Dan, an old friend of mine. He has published a book is coming out now on Freedom Summer, the struggle against segregation in America, where he and another dear friend, John Harris, almost lost their lives. Churches were burned. The terrorists were really busy in Mississippi. Jim Dan was there. He wrote his own memoir, an account. I really recommend people get it. I'm sorry to tell you that Jim Dan has died of leukemia in California. He's 72 years old. Good friend of ours, program. We had been planning to interview him about his book. Thank heaven we did have him on this show for almost an hour, and we really were pleased to have him. So you're listening to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. You can write to us, Taylor at CIUT.FM. And Andy, thank you very much. We will see you guys next week.